We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
We go ahead.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
The Cubs have been winning despite some shaky bullpen performances. Are they working through those issues or running in place?
I think they made a good first step by not committing to Craig Kimbrell after his disastrous performance on Friday. And you wonder about David Ross coming in, as how is he going to manage his friends? We've talked about it a lot. You worried about him continue to have patience when he hasn't really earned it. And Craig Kimbrell really hasn't earned it. He has been terrible as a Cub and giving up home runs at an alarming rate. And the other night was just one of those moments that we've seen too often before. And so I don't think the Cubs can afford to be patient with him. Look, this is a guy with Hall of Fame credentials, but he certainly has not been that guy in Chicago. And you have to recognize that. And I think, to David Ross's credit, he has.
Mully and Hall.
I get a kick out of you guys.
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Roberts slices a ball to right center field. Starling back at the wall. It is gone! Oh, easy power from 88!
The White Sox rookie class is making an impact. What stands out to you about the group?
The rookie class has been spectacular, and that includes a couple of relievers. It's good to see the young guys coming up. Obviously, Louis Robert is the star of stars, and I would leave him at leadoff. I think he's perfect in that spot, and I think that Tim, you can move later in the lineup. It gives you a huge boost to have a guy like that, making sure that he can follow kind of the formula he followed last year when he had the best batting average in the American League. So I think it just makes you more dangerous to have him at the top of the order, and I would leave him there. Every time you see him play, there is something that jumps out at you about him. He is a guy that flashes in every game.
Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And we should tell everyone that the Tech Zone is brought to you by Rosa Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com, because we have a texter who checks in. And I think this is how we ought to play this. I think, you know, again, Mike Trout with speed for Louis Robert. That's the comparison. Our texter says Robert is Aaron Judge with power.
Yeah, I saw
so
that.
I think, well played. I think we ought to kind of keep that going. We got to Paul Bunyan this thing and just turn him into a mythological superhero.
Boy, I don't know how much more mythological you get with Aaron Judge and Mike Trout. Who else could we compare him to in the game? He's already been compared, I think, preseason to Willie Mays, Ken Griffey Jr. Is there a Barry Bonds in there somewhere?
Barry Bonds without the juice.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy.
Of course. Yeah. Do you remember talking to Ricky Renteria during spring training 1.0 back in Arizona? And I think, and we'd have to go back and check, but I have a vague recollection of asking him about the idea of starting and leading off Luis Robert. And I don't think at the time he thought that was such a good idea. I do think it's a very good idea now, and I think we saw why over the weekend, whether it was out of necessity or whatever, because of Tim Anderson's injury. This is an idea whose time has come, and I would not move him now, even after Tim Anderson comes back. I would find a way to make it work with whatever approach you want to take with the other guys, but leave him at the top.
I think he's your number three hitter. Not right now, but eventually. I think that's where he'll end up slotting in. And I think that maybe if everything goes according to Hoyle, and it won't happen immediately, but maybe it's Madrigal leading off someday, and you got Johan, and then you have Louis Robert, and I don't know if Abreu is still there or if he's moving to DH and you get an Andrew Vaughn. Or I mean, I'm just saying eventually when you look at all this stuff, you're going to have a different lineup than the one you have right now. But for right now, Louis Robert is a better option at the top of the lineup because it's more at-bats for him, and I'm all for that. I think Tim Anderson, it's interesting. You know, Tim's not a leadoff guy. I don't know that Louis Robert is either. I mean, a leadoff guy is supposed to see a lot of pitches, right?
What is traditionally a leadoff guy? A guy who you want to get to the plate as much as possible.
Well, a guy that you want to look at pitches and be able to, you know, traditionally a leadoff guy is someone that, you know, you want them not
what
jumping
is tradition
on the first
anyway?
Pitch.
What does tradition mean anymore? There's no tradition anywhere.
Are we going stage play again? We're going to sing tradition?
How about our texters coming through, though, Molly? How about this? Like Ripken, but more durable. The LeBron of baseball. Roberto Clemente.
Michael Jordan with the turnaround jumper.
Not bad. Not bad. Yeah. Look, the way that he kind of just goes about it, we heard Jason Benetti say, easy power to right field.
Yeah.
It looked effortless. Everything he does looks effortless.
Yeah. Is he gonna? Who's gonna lead the White Sox in home runs? That was one of the questions asked of Aloy after that the game where he and Louis Robert did, and he basically Aloy said that he's the real Panther. He's the real
La Pantera. Yeah.
It was hysterical.
It was. Those guys were really, you know, to see their chemistry and camaraderie. It reminds you just how young they are. And it suggests how well they get along. And that is fun to see from a White Sox fan's perspective because they have a lot of guys like that. Just with, you know, and they're playing looser. Well, you can see it. They're no longer, they're not 1-4 in fear of going to 1-5. Ever since they won that game to become 2-4, it's been sort of a different approach. And they have come through in a way that we expected to from day one.
Yeah, they've won 4 games in a row, and it's just a relief to see them with a winning record. It really is a relief because there was the second Lucas Giolito start that we had determined was, now in retrospect, we look at it as kind of a turning point, but at the time, it was the must win, and it was the statement game and all that. And it's hard to believe that Giolito in the post game, it was a must win. We had to win this game, and everybody knew it. And now look, you know, then you get the glory that is Kansas City, and all of a sudden you're with a winning record and you're heading in the right direction and the arrow has turned. Now, having said that, I'm very curious to see what happens with the Brewers, against the Brewers, because it's a pretty good Brewers team, but they got some issues right now, and certainly it is a good time to catch them where they're coming off a longer layoff than you really want at this point in the season, and Lorenzo Cain is gone, and you're not going to have to deal with the man that tried to fire the tester. I won't even mention his name for you. The future DH. So it's a good time to catch him. Now, what does that mean? I mean, it, you know, for the Cubs, it's a great time to catch Kansas City because it's always a good time to catch them. But maybe the Brewers are reeling a little bit here.
Well, they certainly are. That's why both teams, the Cubs and the White Sox, have to take advantage of the White Sox have an opportunity here with a home-and-home against the Brewers, 2 in Milwaukee, and then they come back to Chicago for 2 later this week. And before, you know, then they're getting ready for next week, Molly. You know, next week is the Field of Dreams trip. That's kind of on hold, I would think, or at least it hasn't been announced yet. But I wonder if they're going to end up going to Iowa because they play the Cardinals, and we don't know what the future holds for the Cardinals. The Cubs have to go to St. Louis this weekend, and we find out later today about what their future will hold because of they're waiting for test results. And I think that is sort of the balance for baseball fans in Chicago. Like, you're excited about what you saw. You're hoping that things continue. And then you're like, God, you know, you're just holding your breath when you hit refresh and hope that there's not another bad headline along the way.
Well, the Cardinals numbers are just growing, right? Every time they do more testing, it seems like they find more cases, and that is really disturbing. So again, I think they were asked yesterday on the Zoom about that series against the Cardinals, and was it John Lester who said that, you know, probably isn't going to happen, right? I mean, I think they're already with that mentality that you know, we're not going to that series. That series isn't going to be played. So that's kind of a frightening idea, isn't it?
That's next weekend in St. Yep. Louis, and they're already, talking in those terms. That was Saturday, John Lester, before he went out yesterday and pitched really well again. He's bringing it. So you just don't know. That's what I mean. So you get excited about what you have seen and what's happened so far in Chicago baseball, and then you wonder about, how uncertain the schedule will be, how it's going to play out, and who's going to be able to finish their season, and what's it going to mean in the standings? You know, are you going to go with the highest winning percentage, and at what point? And I said it earlier, and I said it again, I mean, Rob Manfred at some point is going to have to define competitive integrity, right? Because that's the thing in terms of if one team plays 53 games or 54 games and then the others play 60, how are you going to compare those teams in the standings? Is it just by winning percentage? And at what point, you know, who's playing for the Cardinals this weekend?
Well, that's, I think, what it comes down to. If indeed you have a bunch of players out and you're, you know, fielding for the Cubs, your South Bend team, or for the White Sox, your Schaumburg team, is that being competitive? Is that fair to everybody in Major League Baseball? And I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I'm not sure how they view it, David. And I think if I heard the commissioner correctly when he talked about how competitive he is and how much he wants to play, I think what they're saying is we don't want to stop regardless. I think that's what they're saying. So field whatever you can and let's just keep going. That's kind
You're
of
right.
the mentality. Yeah,
I think it is. But how fair is that? Because
it's not
obviously,
fair. Yeah.
See, when it was the Marlins, people were like, "Well, you know what? That's like the worst team in the league anyway. So what's the difference between their 45th player and their 11th? Not much. But when it's the Cardinals, and if it were the Yankees or the Cubs or the Red Sox or a marquee team in Major League Baseball, then it starts to get a little bit more difficult in terms of a question to answer. And I think you're right that they're determined. Rob Manfred has not said much, which says a lot, right? Because he doesn't want to address this head on. It doesn't seem like he is, at least publicly. Privately, I'm sure that he has, but I don't. We're asking all sorts of questions because we haven't been given any plausible answers.
And I don't want to pick on Craig Kimbrell here, but when you mentioned the crowd, you know, and you know, it was kind of funny. Watching the hockey game, I thought one of the funniest lines was from Pierre Maguire when they start talking about the Blackhawks getting that penalty for too many men on the ice. And they're, oh, you know, what's going on with that? How did that happen or something? And Pierre Maguire says, well, it had nothing to do with crowd noise. And I thought that was very funny. Because, you know, nothing that's happening has anything to do with crowd noise. I think
right.
we've come to that
right.
conclusion. But but when you talk about a guy like Kimbrell, is it not to his advantage that there is no crowd noise?
No.
Because there is nobody
no.
going after him in
no.
his home stadium.
I don't think so, Mully. I think it's the opposite. I think that he
okay.
has – I think he's such an adrenaline junkie. And I'm not saying that this is why he has struggled, because we have seen him struggle in front of full houses. But this is another thing. We talked to Tommy Hotovy about this a month ago or several weeks ago. How does a guy who lives and is fueled by that sort of moment, being in the moment and the music and the atmosphere and the crowd, how does he respond when there's an empty stadium? And I think that we're seeing how he does. It's hard for him to maybe generate that kind of adrenaline and to create that sort of moment. So I don't know. I think that probably it hurts him more than it helps him.
All right, that's good. We'll run that one by Bruce. We'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Play ball!
Bruce Levine, 670 The Score baseball analyst.
It is all baseball.
32 years, baseball veteran reporter.
Bruce, I've known you for a number of years now.
Breaking stories faster than a cheetah can run. And as far as I know, cheetahs are speedy.
I went ahead and broke the story on Twitter, and then, of course, had to write a story on the website at 670thescore.com.
Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine.
By the way, I loved you in The Wizard of Oz.
Bruce Levine.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to the Score's baseball expert, Bruce Levine. He joins us on the Alphamonte Ford Hotline, Alphamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Bruce.
Morning, Bruce.
Good morning, guys. A good weekend of Chicago baseball. Where would you like to start?
Well, I think we should start with Kimbrel because we were just talking about this, and I asked David if he felt that the lack of crowd was a benefit to Kimbrel, because if he's coming out at Wrigley, I mean, my God, there's a lot of people booing on Twitter, but there's no one to actually respond to what they've seen from him. And David kind of went in the other direction, which I think is interesting, the idea that he's an adrenaline guy and he's not getting pumped up because there isn't that crowd to kind of build him up. How do you handle him? What do you do with him? What's going on with him?
You know, I'm in the middle of there because I don't think the crowd's impacting him at all. We saw last September with still a 97-mile-an-hour fastball and a breaking ball that wasn't getting called for a strike. We saw him struggle last September in full houses. And, you know, no one remembers better than that September 21st game against the Cardinals where he imploded, gave up back-to-back home runs, and we never saw him again the rest of the season, another week in the season, and that was it. So Kimbrel has some flaws in his delivery that they're trying to work on, but the major flaw is with his confidence right now. He's just not a confident pitcher. He's not the guy that was on the Hall of Fame trek over the last 10 or 11 years, and rediscovering the mental side of it is what the Cubs are most concerned with. I think they believe the stuff is there, but he is just the belief in getting the job done and being the best in the game just doesn't appear to be there right now, guys.
Bruce, the Sox have won four in a row. The Cubs are sitting there at 7-2 and having done everything right, I think, in terms of preparation and execution. What did you learn about either team that stood out over the weekend?
Well, you learned about the White Sox something we already know, that if you give that offense a chance, they're going to score runs and they're going to be exciting. And what I mean by giving them a chance is you got to get good starting pitching. So you jump back to the Cubs from that analysis and say, what has been the key to the Chicago Cubs going 7-2 and having their best start since 2016? And it's obviously been the starting pitching. There's only been two clunkers along the way, and they weren't horrible. One was Hendricks, and one was Darvish. The rest, everybody has pitched tremendously and kept the team not only in games, but the other team down to very few runs. That's what the White Sox have done over the past four games. They've pitched better. Their starting pitching is better. It started back again with Giolito. You saw Cease have his first good one. So these are really important things. It's got to continue with Carlos Rodon tonight when they play the Brewers. But again, it's no magic to the game of baseball. You can have the greatest offense in the world, and the White Sox may end up having that. After that magnificent weekend, 21 hits followed by 14 hits, they may have that great offense. But you're not winning anything without good pitching, and in particular, good starting pitching. And that's what they've gotten over the past weekend here. And that's why you see the White Sox starting the arrow to point up.
When we make comparisons with Louis Robert, we're getting kind of crazy about it. We had a texter who called him Jim Thorpe with more athleticism. Who is he to you? What do you see when you watch the guy play?
He's the best version of a young outfielder that I've seen maybe since I don't know. You know, take your pick. Is it Barry Bonds? Is it Ricky Henderson? Is it Bo Jackson, when he started playing baseball? And when I say the best version, I mean that there seems to be so many ways that Luis Robert is going to be able to impact his team and beat the other team, whether it's covering tremendous ground in the outfield, whether it's running the bases, or whether it's that big impact bat that's probably going to end up hitting between 25 and 40 home runs every year. He's a tremendous talent. And even though we've seen the strikeouts and him miss, on pitches, on breaking balls outside of the zone, We've seen some patience as well, and we've seen him hit balls that are in the zone and waiting for his pitch. So there's a quiet confidence about Luis Robert that you see in athletes who you consider to be having a chance to be great players, and he has a chance to be a great player. We see the great talent. Now the consistency over more than just 9 games, we're going to have to wait and see how that goes. But this is not a guy that they can pitch around either, which is a key for him because of the really good lineup and the power hitters around him. So he's got a lot of support on that team, both on the field and off. You know, it's looking great for Luis Robert and the White Sox. And why not? Why can't the White Sox have one of the best players in baseball?
Great question. You know, Bruce, I think baseball is holding its collective breath this morning, waiting for the results for the Cardinals and their tests to find out how far the outbreak spreads on their roster. John Lester sounded the alarm, said the Cubs going into St. Louis next weekend as scheduled, probably not going to happen. The White Sox play the Cardinals next week in Iowa. Question number one, how do you view what's going on in terms of an outbreak with the Cardinals and how it mirrors what happened with the Marlins? And I guess second to that, if they are having an issue in St. Louis, why couldn't the Cardinals come to Chicago to play the Cubs?
Well, imagine they could if they're cleared at the time, you know, if they feel better about it. I just think the finger pointing of trying to blame individuals for what's been done here is way out of line, way out of the box. So we don't know names, we don't know individuals, we don't know, you know, who in a hotel, who in an airplane, and who outside of the ballpark they're coming into contact with. We want to blame people for not living in a bubble where there, a bubble has not been created in Major League Baseball. So you have to assume there's going to continue to be positive tests. You know, you just don't know how you contract the virus, and you don't know contact-wise who has it. So, yes, you have to be safe, and it appears the Cubs and the White Sox have done good job of that, but these random things are going to come up, and one random test, which is positive, can impact 30 people, and that we've seen that with the Marlins. Hopefully, they've done a good job of looking at the Cardinals, isolating people, and it's not going to spread, but I don't think anybody should be surprised, and I don't think pointing out people and pointing at individuals really gets anything accomplished here, because these environments that they've created were tenuous to begin with, and we all knew about it. And that's why they created all the protocol and all the 113-page medical protocol that they put in place to make sure that everybody is safe.
What do you think of players opting out at this point, and are there more coming?
Yeah, I think so, and I think I understand it, don't you? I mean, wouldn't you guys, you know, God forbid it happened at the Score and everybody was working and all of a sudden somebody came up with the disease and you were given a choice to either go home and work or stay in the environment. You're going to go home. In the case of the baseball players, they can't go home and work. They can't work from home. So they're putting themselves and their families ahead of their profession and their game right now. I guess you could say some of them can't afford it economically not to work, but I would not say anything but, you know, Godspeed, go ahead, we'll see you next year. And I think we're going to see more of it if we can see whole teams testing positive. I mean, you know, if this Cardinal thing, you know, goes up to 10, 12 players, and hopefully it won't, I think you're going to see a whole bunch of players opting out and not wanting to be a part of this. And Major League Baseball has a huge decision to make if that happens. Let's hope it doesn't.
Bruce, you look at the Cubs and Javi gets a walk-off and Rizzo has been hot. But I think the key to their lineup has been the bottom of the order. It's been a surprise. And you look at the 7, 8, 9 hitters and their production has really stood out. How surprised have you been at the production from the bottom?
Very surprised. You know, Bodie, Happ, Horner, you know, Kipnis when he's down there. Huge production from guys, you know, waiting for the top of the order to really start to swing it. You know, Bryant has just shown some signs before He had his gastrointestinal problem the other day. He's starting to show some signs, and Rizzo's showing some signs, and Baez starting to pop out of it. But it's been carried by the bottom of the order, David, like you said. And nobody stepped up bigger than Hap and Bodie. And it's a pleasant surprise because both of them struggled at the end of last year. Bodie didn't really hit much in the second half last year when he was in there. Hap spent 4 months in the minor leagues before coming up in September and showing a little bit of different discipline and a different type of character showing up at the ballpark every day. And they have really carried the team. I think it's been fun to watch. And, you know, going along with that starting pitching, all you need is a certain amount of offense, and they've supplied it.
Great stuff. Appreciate it, Bruce.
Thanks, Bruce.
Have a great day. Take care.
Yeah, you too, buddy. Wow. I think it's really interesting, the position you're in right now, and especially this Cardinals thing, given the Cubs heading there. And, you know, we haven't seen the Chicago teams miss any games yet. And, you know,
right.
Thank God, not from the virus and not from an opponent that has it. But I would imagine that is something that can really interfere with your season. I mean, players they get to a point where they're used to the day-to-day grind. I mean, that's part of being a baseball player is getting to play every day. And I think that these days off are going to affect teams.
They are, in terms of rhythm, in terms of timing, in terms of the physical aspect of the game. But, Mully, to a greater degree, you wonder how it weighs on them mentally. Because when you do go to work under these circumstances and asked to perform at a high level, and you know in the backdrop you're wondering how many guys are positive on this roster, how does it affect me, am I going to affect my family, those have got to be really weighty concerns that it's just very difficult to relate to. So you do have respect when a guy like Lorenzo Cain steps forward and opts out.
All right, we got Biggs time next. We'll bring in our guy Brad Biggs. We'll talk about the quarterback zooming and playing and what it all means. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Brad Biggs. Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Biggs time.
The Biggs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to The Score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a long-time contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Biggsy!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, got a chance to see the quarterbacks talk about the competition, and I was amused at the difference between the two of them. I thought they both handled it very well, but I thought Nick Foles sort of emphasized how up to speed he is and how comfortable he is in the offense and how there is no adjustment time for him. And I felt that that Mitch kind of talked about proving everybody wrong and the competitor that he is. I thought it was a different approach from each guy, but a good approach.
Yeah, I thought they both came off really well. Mitch sort of, you know, picked up the ball from where he left off in early June, the last time we heard from him, in terms of you know, his confidence and his ability to prove the doubters wrong, to show people what he's made of, to emphasize to the coaching staff that he has made these improvements. And you know, if a quarterback can win a press conference in June, Mitch did that. I thought he did well on Friday. Foles just seems very at ease in a environment right now that is not easy to be comfortable in. But I think that's sort of how he rolls. And he talked about, one of the things that struck me is, you know, Foles talked about not focusing on winning the job, but focusing on all the little things that go into doing the best job you can every single day. And, you know, this thing will get going here soon. They've been, you're basically going through walkthroughs. Most people have probably seen some photos from Halas Hall. Everybody's got masks on the field. So it from the outside looking in, it would appear that the Bears have done a pretty good job of keeping things relatively buttoned up thus far.
Yeah, I thought Nick Foles seemed in command and Mitch seemed a little bit on attack, and that's fine because I think you want him to be edgy and go out and win this competition. He was so good at being edgy and sounding motivated, Brad. I wondered how he would accept it if he doesn't win the quarterback competition and is relegated to backup status.
Yeah, well, Foles has got experience as a backup. Mitch has experience too. It came at North Carolina where he sat for, you know, most of his time with the Tar Heels. You know, I can understand why people out there believe Pace wants Mitch Trubisky to win this competition. I totally get that. He's the guy that pulled the trigger on drafting him. I don't get the assertion by people that Nagy wants Trubisky to win the job. I don't think Nagy cares. I truly think the coach wants the guy who gives him the best chance of winning out there. And you know, he's got that relationship with Foles. Let's not forget the stories that were flying around as Foles helped the Eagles to the Super Bowl a couple years ago, where Nagy loaned Foles his car for a day at training camp, right? You know, Nagy was the guy that sort of talked Nick Foles out of leaving football behind, or helped talk him out of it anyway. So they've kind of got a special bond. And I'm not saying that Nagy and Trubisky don't have a bond here either. But, you know, it's possible neither guy really has an edge right now and they're just going to get going. And because of the unfortunate circumstances, the media isn't going to be able to see nearly as much as usual, and the public certainly isn't, as this battle unfolds. Generally speaking, what happens? They start training camp. You see the reports coming out of camp. Some fans can make it to a practice, multiple practices, judge for themselves what's going on the field. Then you've got the preseason games, which everybody can watch. And so you generally are going to have an idea of which way the thing's headed, what the decision is going to be. No preseason, closed practices this year, padded practices that don't start for 2 weeks, and it's going to be much, much different.
You know, I think what I enjoyed about what Foles had to say is, when last we heard about the quarterback competition, it was kind of it was Matt Nagy basically saying that, oh, Mitch is ahead because Nick's at a disadvantage because he didn't do anything, and Mitch is the guy with the relationship with all the players and all that stuff. And I thought, hearing Foles come back and his first comments are, oh, yeah, I was working out in California. Oh, I got some guys to run some routes for me here and when I got here, and talk about my relationship with all the coaches. You know, oh, I feel so comfortable in this offense. And, he worked with Nagy and he worked with Bill Lazor. We know Juan Castillo and John DeFilippo. And he kind of emphasized his advantages in the scheme as opposed to the disadvantage that the coach had brought up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he flipped it around and makes it a positive for him. And that's kind of where I've based, you know, my beliefs the whole time with Foles, is it's a comfort thing. They were not comfortable with the way Trubisky performed last year. Okay. I don't know that he can change that in a short period of time before this season is going to start. These guys do have a history with Foles and a comfort level with them. So Foles goes out and shows that, yeah, he picked up where he left off in Philadelphia in terms of understanding of the concepts and the system. Are there going to be some differences in the playbook? Sure. He's a bright guy. He's going to pick up on that. A lot of this stuff is the same. Maybe the language is slightly different. He's going to pick that up. If he is able to remind them why they were comfortable with him previously, I think that gives him a very early edge in the thing. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I'm looking at it.
Brad, you weigh in this morning in the Tribune talking about Allen Robinson's contract extension talks and how that should be a priority. How complicated is it because of the uncertainty with everything going on in the NFL, and especially for the Bears who have 25 guys scheduled to be UFAs at the end of the season?
Yeah, everything's complicated because of the conditions right now. What we do know about the 2021 salary cap is that the league and the Players Association have agreed on $175 million as a floor for that cap. That's the lowest it could go. It's expected to drop a good bit from where it's at this year, just over $198 million. But the lowest it could go is $175 million. So that complicates things for the Bears, complicates things for the other 31 teams. The Bears would project to be fifth or sixth most snug in terms of cap situation for 2021. They've already got over $175 million for next season committed. So that makes things a little bit tricky when you talk about doing an extension for Allen Robinson. But simply put, a franchise tag, which could be in play for him if they can't get a deal done, would be a higher cap hit than what they could do with an extension for Allen, where you can sort of manipulate those cap numbers, especially on the front end of the contract, to make.
I think we lost Brad.
I
think we have. You know, David, let me run this by you, and I don't know how you feel about it, but when you look at the NFL in the context of whether or not their season will go, do you think that explains why the Bears haven't really pursued a defensive tackle yet? Don't you think that at some point they might want to add some depth to that position, given everything that's going on and Eddie Goldman opting out?
Under ordinary circumstances, you're exactly right. They would have addressed that with somebody, as they say, on the street, or a street free agent, somebody out there. It wouldn't have to be Damon Harrison, Snacks Harrison necessarily. It would have been somebody with some NFL experience, because as you know, those guys are out there. And I think their hesitation kind of underscores the uncertainty that everybody in the league is facing. So that's a good point. Why pay somebody? Why bring somebody into the fold when you just don't know what the future holds?
It's kind of the same situation, you know, we were talking about the rookie class. I'm sure they had agreed to contracts with everyone, and they were just waiting to make sure they reported before everybody signed their contract.
Right.
And they got everybody in the fold, and everybody signed, and here you go. But it's almost the same thing. I mean, they may be pursuing options at defensive tackle, but really no need to invest in it until there's a need to invest in it.
And to close the loop on a conversation with Brad, maybe that is also part of the thinking with Allen Robinson. You want to be certain, you want to have the terms exact, but there's so much uncertainty and inexactness that exists right now. How do you know what you're going to be dealing with the cap, with your own payroll, with your roster?
All right, game two is tonight. The Blackhawks against Edmonton, game two tonight. They drop the biscuit at 9:30. And we're all pretty fired up about it. Hit him with your purse. We're gonna be screaming at the TV, and we're gonna get a chance to talk to Eddie Olczyk next. It's Wally and Haw, The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.